Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Thing I Love Most show with myself, Noel Vahl-Bond. This week, we've got our regular guests, Mr. Lee Curtin and Matty Colson. But we've also got a special guest here, James Sharman. He's been on the show before when we did a special from Barcelona, but we wanted to get him on because he was one of the lucky thousands that were up in the Etihad for the VAR masterpiece of game, which will go in memory for many, many years. So I wanted to obviously have a catch up with him about that, and then obviously catch up with the rest of the guys about all the other goings on that have been happening over the past, well, it's been about almost 2 weeks since we did this, because we didn't do a show on the Monday as we normally do, so we missed out. So this is now Wednesday. So welcome, everybody. How's everyone doing? All good?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, all good.
Great. Happy days. Okay, so I will start with you, James, and we do like to work chronologically on this show, so we are going to start from the City game, the first City game. I'm not going to dwell on the game itself because it was just obviously incredible, so back and forth, terrible defending, and obviously with the incredible ending that was all about the VAR. So just to start on the VAR, how much sort of were you able to sort of speak to other people at the time of the decisions being made, or were you literally just stood there reading the screen thinking, oh my God, they're going to disallow it, or oh my God, they're also disallowing it? Like what was the feeling for the crowd inside the stadium as that was going on?
Well, I think it added to the excitement. I mean, straight away it came up on the screen, VAR pending. So you knew what was happening. I know a lot of people have sort of said it takes away, and, you know, when the goal went in, we all celebrated and went crazy, and then it went to VAR, and then we got to go crazy again. So, I can see how, you know, obviously being on the wrong end of the decision, but that still adds to the game. It's no different to seeing an offside flag go up.
Yeah.
You know, and then the goal's disallowed in real time. Everyone speculates about what it might be. I don't think it detracted from the game, and it certainly didn't detract from the atmosphere.
Yeah. And do you think they will start actually showing the replays? Because I know that was talked about in terms of seeing what we see at home and what the ref is looking at.
I don't know. I mean, you go to any sort of away ground, and even at our ground, if you get a contentious decision, it's very rare that they'll actually show you a replay. You know, if a penalty is given, they won't show you what caused the penalty often.
No,
it will
just be the
penalty being taken. So I can't see them bringing in the actual live replays, but in terms of the effect on the crowd, it seemed pretty instantaneous. I mean,
yeah.
Come the VAR goal, everything was moving in slow motion for me anyway. I mean, I can't remember the last time I've been down and up in such a short space of time. I mean,
yeah, it was.
If anything, the VAR felt like a complete reprieve. I sunk to the chair, head in hands, that was it, we were done. And then just heard the words around me, it's gone to VAR, it's gone to VAR. And I was up, I was like, what's happening? What's going on? And then ref gives the signal, goal disallowed, absolute.
It was
carnage.
Funny because watching it on TV, they obviously were going mad, that they were showing, you know, Guardiola going mad. And then just as the commentator said, they're checking the goal, they had a freeze frame of the offside and you could see it. So it was really weird after that, because we then knew, or we hoped, that the decision would be made. They didn't show the replay. They didn't actually show that. They didn't say that sort of like the movement of the ball from Eriksen and the deflection from Silva. They didn't show that. They basically just, after about 15 seconds, they went to the shot of the ref, and then he basically was just, they said they just disallowed it. And then it was, so that in itself was impressive in terms of it was quite quickly. Obviously, it wasn't a conscientious decision. It wasn't controversial. It's a fact, basically. His feet were offside, so, you know, there's nothing they can do. And I quite like that about it, but it was just that whole moment of just being so down, as you said, and then being so up. I mean, I've never known a situation like that where City were celebrating and then completely cut out. Obviously, you get disallowed goals, but that went on for quite a few seconds. And it was the you know, the magnitude of the game, the fact it had been so back and forth, the fact it was a Sterling hat trick, the fact it did mean that they'd won the game. I mean, Lee, have you ever known anything, any ending like that, where you have, obviously we've had last minute winners, but for a last minute winner to go on for that long and celebrate and then suddenly bang. And the good thing was for us was that they were so deflated. There was no way they were going to score in that last 2.5 minutes because they were just in shock. I think the whole stadium was just in shock.
No, that's, I mean, that was the best part, watching them so high and then so low. That was a highlight. That was huge. But I guess it's something that, as football fans, we'll probably see more of in the future. But I don't think we'll see that again because VAR is still in the very, very early stages. And you're right when you talk about how quick they pulled up the offside. They didn't run the white line and the light blue line. They had the still frame and they're like, bang, he's offside. That's it. You know, they got straight to the ref in his ear. But in the meantime, Guardiola's been to the corner flag and back. You know, he's done 50,000 bunny hops and hugged everybody in the front row. All the City players have gone mental. And then, you know, they're all back, ready to kick off. And, you know, we was all stood there. All the Spurs players all stood around, ready to kick off, absolutely devastated, deflated. And he just points back, then he gives the old VAR signal and points back to, like, where the free kick should be from. And there was no coming back from that. You're absolutely right. So will we see that again? No, I don't think we will. You know, you'll probably get something a little bit close to it, you know, and I think, Man City done it to United, didn't they? When they done QPR that day and Aguero, you know, the famous Martin Tyler one, they've had their time to shine. They've had their moment. And it was the emotion sitting at home. I couldn't imagine what it'd be, the emotions you went through, James, being there. I mean, I was literally on the floor. I was, head down, absolutely devastated. Just to pick your head up and see us all there, you know, Dele Alli just there on his backside, just head in his hands. And then the ref just pulls this out. You're like, hang on a minute. This, which made it even worse, I think, because I thought, he's just teasing me now. If he goes back and says, no, it's a goal, I think I would have kicked the screen in. I think I was but just amazing. Just amazing. So, yeah, no, fair play. You know, I know everyone's had their whinges and their moans about it, and we whinged and moaned about the Danny Rose penalty, which for me, I still think VAR was wrong. I don't think he made his body any bigger, but there's lots to be cleared up. But do you know what? We benefited from this time around, and it wasn't, you know, they can argue about the Llorente one, but he didn't extend his arm. It was in a natural position, you know, and he hasn't stuck it out. He hasn't punched the ball towards the goal with it. You know, it's deflected off his arm, which he can't do nothing about, onto his hip. And that's where the change of direction went. So I don't think that's as contentious as they wanted it to be. Go on, James.
Sorry. I was going to say, I think the big problem with VAR is when it comes to the subjective calls. If it's a factual call, onside, offside, they can speed it through. The problem is always going to be where the interpretation of the rule. So the two handballs are a prime example. Was Danny Rose making his body bigger in the laws of the game to give that penalty? Did Llorente's arm move towards the ball to not to disallow the goal? So that's where you lose the time where the ref has to make a subjective human call. If it's a case of his foot's offside, you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't argue.
Matt, what was your take on the VAR? Obviously, you know, we've already discussed it at length a little bit there. But in terms of the Llorente handball, when you saw the replay and you were listening to the commentary from Genus, what were your thoughts? Did you think he was going to give it, or did you think he was going to disallow it?
Well, I think we was quite lucky because the actual angle that the referee saw it from, when you look at him watching a VAR replay on the camera, it doesn't look like handball, does it? It literally looks like it hit his hip. But the angle that he didn't see, which is the one kind of from the looking at the goal, kind of from the other side, you can see it touches his hand. But I guess, I know they're changing the law, aren't they, where it's going to be, if it touches your hand, whether it's deliberate or not, it's handball. But in that scenario, I don't think it was, because, you know, like Lee said, he's not gaining anything from it touching his hand. It's literally, it would have hit his hip anyway. So as far as I'm concerned, it was a goal. But it's interesting what you're saying, James, about it being subjective, because that's where I think VAR struggles a little bit, because obviously the referee's seeing, he's making his judgment call, but you get the feeling the VAR was put there to actually clear up these things, and it feels like it's actually making them more complicated. I mean, obviously the goal at the end, the Sterling goal, like you said, it's offside. It's a fact, it's offside, and he can say that. But when it becomes subjective, I think it makes it a bit more convoluted, a bit more kind of, there'll be times when referees won't be able to see things because from the angle from where they're standing, but I don't think it improves anything from the point of view of clearing things up. And that both the Danny Rose penalty in the first game and the Llorente handball in the second game, both of them could have gone either way, couldn't they? Mm-hmm. So that's where I think VAR needs to kind of be finely tuned a little bit more.
But that's the thing, you know, you're exactly right in terms of it was brought in to, as they said, basically only be used when it was a clear and obvious error by the referee. Both of those were not clear and obvious handballs. You know, it's not like, as Lee said, he was doing a Thierry Henry or a Maradona, like, which would have been a, you know, if the referee might not have seen the particular angle and he might have punched it in, of course, that would be like, you know, when it should be used. But for that was not a clear and obvious error. Like, it's crazy. So it shouldn't be used. He shouldn't have to go over and look at it. It's interesting, and it will rumble on. And I think you're all right, and you made some valid points. And I think that, you know, as time goes on, they will work the best way out of it, and hopefully it's not used in the wrong way. And I think at the end of the day, you know, we did benefit from it, obviously massively, with that final goal, which would have been incredibly harsh if it was in the normal old style, you know, game without VAR, we would have been out now. You know, so it's incredible in that way to be able to quickly, within 30 seconds or whatever it was, rule it out because it was offside, as opposed to just us literally crying our eyes out the fact that he was offside and, you know, it shouldn't have counted. We'd have been moaning about it for years. Everyone would have just, you know, said, oh, you know, screw you, it's Spursy, whatever, you know, you're always moaning. It would have been horrendous. So, you know, at least we've got that. Anyway, so moving on, go on.
I was going to say, sorry, Noah, I did actually do a Sissoko and I turned the TV off. I know he thought it was over, didn't he, for about 20 minutes. He came into the dressing room afterwards. They said, Musa, come out, we won. He's like,
yeah.
seeing him run across from nowhere in just his tracksuit and flip-flops.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Just appeared celebrating was one of the greatest moments of an away game experience.
Putting himself out for another day. Cheers, Mo.
Yeah, exactly.
He meant to be back for Brighton, and now he's out for another week.
He dropped the ice pack. He was like, forget it. I'm not going to need this. I'm not going to be in a semi-final. He's like, oh man. Give me them frozen peas. Aziz, give me them frozen peas.
If I could just make one more point about the VAR.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're the one that said you wanted to go at courts, right, Tame? So, you know, keep that on, mate.
Don't worry, it's a quick point. I just wanted to say about it. Everything was there for that to go against us. Mm. If you look at the history of Spurs, how many times would we not get something like that? So, for me, I'm a big fan.
No surprise there.
That may change, but for now.
Yeah.
So, briefly, before we do go on and talk about the league game that we went up for, obviously we knew before we were going to get Ajax in the semi, and now we have, and now it's coming around incredibly quickly. It's literally next week, which is just crazy. We're all potentially going out for the semi final. Actually, Lee, I know you're not, you're confirmed, but we are going, and it is going to be amazing. So we're not going to dwell on obviously the previews for the match just yet. But just in terms of your sort of reaction to the draw, did you think it's the best draw we could have hoped for? Do you think they're going to be a harder team because they are maybe slightly underdogs or they are sort of young? So quickly, just Lee, your opinion on that, and do you overall, if the first time you realised it was going to be Ajax, did you think it's good? We're going to do it.
Yeah, what I will say is I think a lot of people are calling them underdogs, but I think a lot of people will look at us and call us underdogs. Probably not around this side, not around our side of London, but I think there's they're very much a reflection of us. The way they try and play, the way their team is, I think very similar. It's going to be two very similar styles. I think it's going to be two great games of football. So when I look at it, yeah, I think probably it's the best draw for us. And the other semi-final, that's going to make for a great final. I think any of these four teams that go through, that it's going to make for a great final. So I think it's a good draw for us, because I think Pochettino knows how to set himself up against these sort of sides. I think we'll do all right, and they don't pose an obvious threat to our weakness, which is lots of pace up front. Mm. I know they've got players and they move the ball really well, but I wouldn't really fancy going up against Salah and Mane and Firmino over two legs, which undone Pep and his team last time around. So I think it suits us.
Do you think we're going to, if we know Sissoko is definitely out of the first leg and potentially even the second leg, Wink seems to be a maybe, hopefully he doesn't need to start on Saturday against West Ham. Do you think injuries might play a part? Obviously, Kane is definitely out. James?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not ideal going into any semi-final with the sort of injury crisis that we're facing. It's going to be interesting to see what Poch does in terms of the West Ham game, in terms of rotation, because mm-hmm. we're very limited in what we can rotate to pick up results. I mean, missing Son for the first leg of the semi is going to be a massive loss.
I think if you'd have chosen a leg to miss, it would have been the first home leg. So, you know, I think that in itself is a bit of a blessing that we are going to have him as a goal threat in Amsterdam. So, Matt, if you could choose between Barcelona and Liverpool to play in the final, who would you choose? We're already there, by the way. We're doing it again. We did this before, though. We were confident against Dortmund. We'd done it before, and I said we were going to do well in City. We've done it. We're doing it the whole way. This is the first season we've done this podcast. I'm not going to say we're the lucky charm, but we are the lucky charm. So anyway, Matt, who would you prefer to play?
Do you know what? There's one team I prefer to play, Barcelona, for the simple reason being, if we got Liverpool and they beat us, can you imagine their fans for the next 30 years?
Well, that could even be a double for them as well.
Every time, I don't know about you guys, but every time I meet a Liverpool fan, the second word out of their mouth is Istanbul. So can you imagine just what it'd be like if they beat us? I couldn't cope with it. I really couldn't cope with it. So for me, let's get Barcelona if we do make it to the final.
Oh dear. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. Right. Fingers crossed, guys. We got this. James and I went up to Manchester again. For the first time. I'd never been to the Etihad, actually. So it was a planned trip before we got them in the quarterfinals. And it was incredibly annoying to literally just play up there. A couple of days after, and maybe that did have a reflection on the result. I'm not sure. It was a weird feeling going up there. It would have been a much bigger game. It would have been a more tense game for us if we had have lost, or if it wasn't Man City that we had played literally a couple of days before. Because we were almost still in celebratory mode. It was very strange. Like, we were singing about VAR the whole game, and they obviously wanted it more than us in that respect. It was a bigger game for them. And we were right next to the City fans, and they were absolutely giving it. And there was some good banter. Saw a couple of people almost get chucked out, and there was a woman going absolutely nuts at a City fan, which was hilarious. And then there was a Korean fan who was literally just swearing at me. He was just going VAR, and he was going bang, bang. It was brilliant. He was absolutely. I don't know how he didn't get chucked out. He was so blatantly swearing at him. I was like, man, you're a legend. He's an absolute legend. He was literally going up. It was brilliant. So let's talk about the game, because it was, as I said, I think it almost felt a little bit weird like that. But City were nervous for me. Like, you know, they didn't play their normal. I don't think they're playing that well at the moment anyway. They're not their usual selves, I think. So I think we probably played them at a good game. The one thing they did do well, I suppose, was Ederson came out early and he spread himself. I think that's pretty much the quick summary of the game in terms of we had quite a few chances, but he's a good keeper, doesn't always show it, but he did on Saturday. And I think it was one of those games that we looked back on, and especially when you looked at the highlights on TV, it was like we had the better chances. You know, we should have really won the game if you know, our shooting would be better. Maybe, you know, I know Son sort of in a couple of chances, Laporte came back and made a good challenge, but it was a frustrating game in that sense, because we did perform well, but obviously we didn't really care that much about it. It was really, really weird. So James, obviously you're up there with me, and obviously we discussed it at length on the day, but what was your thoughts? It was a weird atmosphere to begin with, wasn't it?
It was very weird. I mean, I think it was a very large come down from the Champions League game. I think it was two very tired sets of players. I think a lot of fans had stayed up there from the Champions League game, so there was probably a fair few tired fans as well. And like you say, I think on reflection, we deserved at least a point, and on another day could have easily won the game. City, I think we got to them. I think mentally they were very rattled. They weren't expecting us to knock them out, and they weren't expecting us to knock them out in that way. And it'll be very interesting to see how they push on tonight in terms of their game with United.
This is true, which kicks off in 36 minutes. So, Lee, we often talk about the right-back, right-wing-back situation here, because obviously we're big fans of Kyle Walker-Peters. What was your opinion of Foyt's performance?
Do you know what? I think you look around the social medias beforehand, and I think everyone shared the same concerns in terms of Foyt over Walker-Peters. And he didn't start great. But he's always going to be troubled. He's always going to be troubled out on the wing, especially with pacey players. He's not blessed with natural speed. But as the game went on, he kind of held his own. He started a bit nervy, but he did hold his own. And you know, I for one was a bit nervous at the start. But you know, hold my hands up. He grew into the game. He did all right as it went on, to be fair to him. I still prefer him in the middle of the pitch, and I still prefer him with a little bit of insurance behind him. You know, we spoke about him before, you know, earlier in the season, where he's had a great game, you know, and then, you know, and then got torn a new one against Wolves, bless him. You know, it's hard. But, leaving Walker-Peters out on that day was, you know, I think Poch missed a trick that day. Because I think attacking him and a little bit more pace, we would have taken a point off him easily, you know. And we kind of set up defensively because we're lacking attacking options, you know, just due to the numbers and having such a big game midweek and another one on last night. So the games were coming thick and fast. So I was a bit surprised that he didn't really entrust Walker-Peters to go, you know, have a little pop at them. But
I think he just doesn't rate him. I think it's just, you know, we obviously do on the show. We may as well call it the thing I love most is KWP, because we really do. And it's just strange. I don't know if he doesn't perform in training, or I just don't know what it is. It is quite strange, because he does offer more going forward, and Foyt didn't really do that. That was the frustrating thing, because he does have the ability to be quite confident, as we know, because he loses the ball a lot. But his confidence did prove to be okay when in the second half he made a few quite decent challenges on Sané and Sterling to win the ball back, even in the area. He doesn't mind going in. He doesn't, you know, he's like, I'm going to get this ball. Matt, do you think, considering we may have a sort of defensive midfielder need, do you think that's where he could potentially find himself? Because Lee's talking about he's comfortable in the middle, and Lee feels comfortable when there's defenders behind him. So could he be a better, more mobile Eric Dier with a bit of a pass in him?
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing. You hit on a good point, Lee, with the sort of the insurance behind him. I think he'd probably be better as a kind of, like, you know, a defensive midfielder. He doesn't I know they talk about the modern centre back. He doesn't almost look like a centre back either, does he? He's not got that kind of presence about him as well. But he's obviously he's a very good technical football player, you know, and he's obviously very confident and with experience. Possibly, yeah. I mean, possibly he could move up, you know, because he's a defensive minded player. But I don't know if it's the centre back role is going to be him long term. So yeah, you're probably right. He probably will go forward and kind of move forward with that insurance behind him, which will kind of make us all feel more comfortable.
Happy days. Good, good, good. Any other performances stick out from you in that game? Obviously, it was, you know, Son and was a threat. Eriksen had a decent chance. But I think they were tired. They were mentally tired, I think, as James already alluded to. I think you could tell that second half, that was flat. You know, that was like... Phew, that was like sort of extra time after 90 minutes almost. It had that feeling of like, oh, they've got to go up there again. No, let's just kick it out like Wanyama did in the last few minutes of that game.
Oh, that was classic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought Victor did well. I thought he did well because I don't think anybody expected him to line up again on Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't played much football, but I think it's done him the world of good. You know, I think the game's coming thick and fast has kind of got him up to a kind of, not, I wouldn't say total match speed, but he's up there at a level where we need him now with Mo out. You know, I'm kind of glad it's kind of worked in his favour and it's worked out for us. I thought he did well actually, Vic. I think he's had a couple of good appearances now, the last two or three.
So it's time now, we've almost caught up to today, which obviously was the day after the Brighton victory, a very, very hard-fought victory. It was one of those frustrating games to watch as a spectator because we had so much possession, and they had so many men behind the ball. I mean, in the second half, it was just ridiculous. And the couple of times they had the ball, when they made runs, they were shooting from like 40 yards. It was like, it was ridiculous. It was like, you know, there was a guy behind me who said, they're giving the ball back to us quicker than their keeper. Because it was true, because like the keeper was just time wasting so much, Matt Ryan. And, you know, there was, I think it was Solly March and someone else, Murray, had a shot from miles around. It's like, they were almost one-on-one with like Toby or someone. It's like, what are you doing? Like crazy, crazy. So it was a weird game. It was one of those games that we've faced many a time in recent years in terms of teams coming to our home stadium, be it Wembley, be it the old White Hart Lane, and basically sitting back and playing for a draw and praying for a draw. And this time almost getting a draw. We really struggled to break them down. It was weird. In that first half, there was a space on the wide areas. Mora and Son were getting quite a lot of space, but they weren't really attacking the space. They were getting it and they were doing what Trippier seems to do now, which is basically be rubbish and sort of like just like pass it back and just not have the confidence to really go at the byline like Rose does quite a bit and cross it in. Like, they just don't seem to have that same mindset. It was very rare that they utilised that space. And then, obviously, they switched sides. They got frustrated. And then they started trying to go through the middle. It was all tippy-tappy football. Eriksen and Ali. The odd chip over the top. The Dele Alli chance, which Trippier found him, was probably the only good thing that Trippier did all game. And it was a great ball, don't get me wrong. And, obviously, they cleared off the line. Rose got through on the left. And, again, cleared by... dunk. So it was frustration for me and for the whole game, and it was for the crowd as well. You could feel the frustration building up as it was going on, and it was being vented at Trippier, it was being vented at Eriksen for a lot of the game, and Lee's favourite player, and obviously then Janssen came on and apparently changed the game. So it was crazy. I mean, and also what frustrated me, before I get your guys' opinion, was Llorente being on there, but then they weren't playing to his strengths. Like, he thrives on crosses. He thrives on knock. He will basically be that player to knock it down, to chest it, to head it down to Mora or to Son running either side. He doesn't want it into his feet. He doesn't want it tippy-tappy football. What's the point in that? his control isn't that good enough to do that, and his touches aren't that good enough. So I don't think there was one time where we utilized him for the whole game, and it was just ludicrous. I couldn't believe it. And it was just, you know, if we hadn't have won, it would have been very, very annoying to have not made the most of that situation, because Brighton were not offering anything at all. So, Matt, I'm going to go to you first. What was your thoughts on the game, and how happy were you when you saw that Eriksen shot going at the end?
So relieved. I think talking about Llorente with getting the ball to him, they had like almost their entire team in that penalty box. Almost, it felt like for the entire game. It was, you know, there was I saw on Twitter someone was saying you can't catch a bus in Brighton today because they're all parked in the Tottenham ground. You know, they did that thing that every, well, not say every club, but every sort of, you'd say lower position club in the Premier League do, where they're just going to defend for their lives and then just hope to nick a goal or at worst get a draw, you know. And it's frustrating, and you know, talking about social media again, I saw a lot of fans criticising our fans when they were at the stadium saying that there was a lot of negativity, but it was just frustration, wasn't it? You know, we knew that if we drew the game, then you got them scumbags that could have overtaken us today if they win, you know. So there was a lot to play for, and when you play Brighton, you're not entitled to beat them, but you expect to beat them. And you know, as the game's going on, and we're not finding that winner, we were getting frustrated.
Of
but
course.
Yeah, when the goal flew in, I think I lost it, probably like most fans did. But just the sheer relief that we won it.
So Lee, moving on to you, because obviously you have had issues with Eriksen over the past couple of weeks, and we do joke about them, but it's all meant in jest to an extent. He again last night, what I did like about his performance was he was trying to be creative in terms of he was doing something different, you know, and he was looking for those passes, those little chips, and he was crossing with his left and his right, and he was asking for the ball. And you can't really ask much more. Obviously, he could have hit a better shot earlier on in the game. He could have even hit a better cross in an earlier game. But to be fair, to still have the balls to hit a left foot shot from 25 yards out in the 89th minute, to me, gets a lot of credit. And people were still criticising him after the game. But for me, to have that shot and to be like, okay, F it, I'm going to go for it. And to hit such a good shot with his left peg, that we know he's got the ability. For me, I think he did very, very well.
Well, I think you just summed it up right there at the end. Every fan knows he's got the ability. Let's just chuck that out there first. I think every fan knows he's got the ability. And he's, I often say to people, you've got world-class players, and then you've got a level just below them. And he's probably just below world-class. And I think some people put him up a little bit higher and therefore expect more from him. Now, my frustrations with him is when he's hitting a one-man wall, when he's not clearing the first man. You know, that if you're considered that good, you should, you know, when there's nobody on you and you're hitting a dead ball, mate, you've got to be lifting it. You do it daily. You do it repetitively for 3 hours every morning. So there's no excuse for that. But what I will say, I said last week, he's still one of my favourite players, and he's still integral to what we do at Tottenham. He's still the guy who transitions the ball for us. He's still the guy that transitions the play. And if Winks ain't on the pitch, Eriksen is integral to that. And my biggest problem with him last night is he probably, when we're looking for pace, and it's not just his fault, you've got to remember there's 9 other outfield players out there with him. And if they're not giving him, if they're not making the right runs, if they're not giving us the right enough width, it's hard to pick those passes. So my only problem is sometimes with him is that his pass selection. And when we're struggling to get down one side as a team, and not as Eriksen, as a team, we never switch to play quick enough. Mm. We bang into the middle and we never open up our bodies and go out to the left. And if it's dead down the left, we never come back into the middle, open our body and go out to the right. We tend to come one side and bang it back out to that side again. There you go, Trippier. Oh, no. Okay, give it back to me. Oh, have another go, Trips. No, give it back to me. And that allows the other teams to shut that space down. And the closer they get to you, the narrower the angle becomes. And then trying to fit a ball into little gaps like that is almost impossible, because you then have to go backwards to open them up again. And we sometimes, we're too slow doing it. And I think Eriksen comes in for a lot of stick because he's the guy that we all give the ball to. You know, Wanyama ain't going to pick that pass out. Dele wants to be on the end of that pass. Sonny's probably got it in his locker every now and then, but when he's not really cooking, he's not really cooking. Mm. When Sonny's not cooking, for me, he needs to be the centre forward. I don't want to see him out on the wing if he's not going to run at people. And the only other person is Mora then, you know, who kind of gets his head down and he will go on a little mazy run. And he didn't do much of that last night either.
He was poor second half. I think like we said before, though, I think there was definitely fatigue. And you could tell that there was, you know, it's been a long few weeks for them. And it was like, you know, even that travelling for them, the Manchester games, you know, Mora was saying that after the Manchester game, that he had about 4 hours sleep.
Four hours, the first one.
Jesus. And then obviously came back, trained, and then go back up, you know.
Well, we went home now. They brought him back to London, which I thought was really bizarre. Mm. They brought him back to London, you know. But hey, you know, there's lots of science and stuff that goes into it, and they think that the players sleep better when they're at home and they've got their own pillows and their own mattresses and their own, you know, all of that stuff that goes with it. But you know, not to get away from it, I thought Eriksen, you know, he stuck at it last night, and like you said, it was only him really. When you look at the players that were left on the pitch, it was only him or Son that could hit a ball like that. Mm. And it was going to end up in the back of net from outside the box at that distance.
Well, obviously, and that's what you know, we're going to add Janssen to that list as well. Joking.
Hey, go on, BJ.
So James, I mean, I think that is a really interesting point about Eriksen. But, I mean, statistically, he's been involved in 5 of the 8 goals that they scored at the new stadium. So he's obviously enjoying himself there. And maybe he has lifted himself a little bit more. And I think Lee's exactly right. When we haven't got wings, he's so key, more than when we have, because he is that linchpin. But I want to ask you about Trippier, because there were so many times yesterday where he had the ball in space and he didn't cross the ball. And I know he doesn't like trying to take the man on. I know he doesn't do the Walker Peters get to the byline and cross it in with pace, because it's not really his game. I completely get that. But is he just lacking confidence now that he doesn't even cross the ball? He was more happy to just do a little inside ball to Ali or Son, because that's his strength. He can cross a good ball. And, you know, he's got Llorente in there. He had Janssen in there towards the end, but he was still very, very, very hesitant at crossing the ball. So what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is a massive confidence issue. I mean, he came out himself a couple of weeks ago and said, He's been watching back some of his performances from the start of the season, and even he doesn't know what he was trying to do. I mean, something that was said earlier about Foyth in the Wolves game. I mean, Wolves away, I was at that game, and Trippier pretty much stitched him up for both of the penalties that he ended up conceding. It was right in front of me. He tried to nutmeg the opposition player back towards goal, and just lost the ball, which then left Foyth 2-on-1, and he had to make a decision. So I'm glad that he's recognised that he maybe was trying to overcomplicate things. But at the same time, I think he's maybe gone back a little bit too simplistic and lost that tiny bit of an edge. You know, Trippier of last season would have just knocked it half a yard and then whipped that ball in. He's never been one to take the fullback on. I think I've seen him complete one take on in the last 2 seasons. But if he's not got the confidence to just take that touch and whip it in, then maybe it is time to give Walker Peters a go, or even continue with Foyth.
True. I mean, we do laugh about the whole Janssen thing only because we know... Cam, one of our good mates on the show, and she's absolutely obsessed with him. So we do poke fun at her. But he did actually look quite good yesterday, I thought, when he came on. Obviously, very much a small cameo role. But nice to see him back. And I think also, you know, there does seem to be a little bit of a potch. I don't know. It seems to have changed his mind maybe about something, or maybe it was just down to necessity in terms of we didn't have anyone else. It was a strange one. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think that he's going to be fit, and I think his attitude's going to be good, because I don't think he'd be anywhere near the first team if it wasn't, because obviously Poch didn't even give him a squad number at the beginning of the season. So he's clearly turned things around with his attitude and with his fitness. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a start, you know, at the weekend, obviously with the Champions League game coming up as well. why not? You know, give Llorente a rest for the Ajax game. But yeah, he seems to have. I don't think it's. I couldn't imagine Poch giving him an opportunity, literally because we've got no one else. If it isn't for the fact that he turned his attitude around, because of the fact that he's, you know, he's back in the squad, and we didn't think we'd see him in the back of the squad, you know.
And I mean, Lee, you've gone sideways there, mate. I don't know what's happened there. No. There he is. But, all that Ericsson compliments is creating an ulterior universe. It's turning into a bit of a fortress, isn't it? Like, no goals conceded. What we created?
Well, it's all about the wall, isn't it? It's all about the 17,500, mate. There's 17,500 sucking the ball in at one end because the North Stand hasn't seen nothing. So it's all been out 8 goals at one end. So, no, it's listen, it's home, and I think for the boys, and for everybody connected, and you know that they're home. They've got somewhere to play. They've got somewhere to be proud of. They're not, you know, this is what they're used to. They've had a couple of seasons away. We haven't added many players in that time, so everybody feels like they've literally returned home, and they've got this massive stadium. We talk about how impressive it is. You know, it is the newest one around. So, yeah, it is the best. But these guys, they've got something to play for. They've got something to be proud of. They've got double the amount of fans to get behind them and entertain. And, listen, they've turned up. And you can see. And maybe that's what Ericsson needed. He just needed to be at home again, you know.
It is the West Ham game on Saturday. Always one to look forward to just because they hate us so much. It's ridiculous. The rivalry is very, very much one way, I think. But, you know, and they say to us, it's still our cup final. I'm like, what are you talking about, you mentalists? So our recent record has been pretty decent against them. So I'm expecting the game to hopefully be okay. Obviously, we are going to have one eye on the semi-final. So I'll start with you, James. Selection-wise, what would you do and what would you think? What do you think Poch is going to do?
I can't see him making too many changes from the Brighton lineup, purely because I don't think we have too many players to change from the Brighton lineup. It would be nice to see Vincent Janssen given a start instead of Llorente. And you say one of the few players who can bang it in from a distance. He certainly has it in his locker, judging by some of his international goals that he scored. Again, probably give Trippier a rest. I wouldn't mind seeing Kyle Walker-Peters start. It's going to be a much different game, though. West Ham, like you say, they're not coming to our ground to sit 10 men behind the ball. They'll want to be the first to not only score, but to win there. And we can't let that happen.
I'm just not looking forward to the fans coming. I mean, it's just they're just.
Well, Sullivan have paid for the damage in advance. It's fine.
Exactly. You know, it's just.
Although there is an alcohol ban in the stadium, apparently.
Really?
The away fans.
Oh, the away fans. Good. Oh, that's fair enough.
Okay.
Happy days. So, Lee, who would you start with? Not go through your whole lineup, but the changes that you would make.
No, I kind of agree with James there. I think it'd be nice to see maybe Janssen start or have half an hour. If he doesn't start, give him half an hour. Don't give him 10 minutes and mug him off. Let him open his lungs up, give him a little run and give Llorente a breather. I would go with Walker-Peters as well. I'm not too sure about the centre-backs because I know they're going to look to lump it in. You know, or they're quite still got attacking threats. So I'd expect to see Toby and Jan probably start. And I'll probably see Ben Davies on the left-hand side and save Rosie for midweek, really. That'd be the ones that we can change, to be honest.
You don't think he's going to rest one of Toby or Jan and put in Sanchez? He seems to do that sometimes quite a bit, yeah, coming up to a big game.
Possibly, but you know what? I still think 3 points is still needed. And Sanchez isn't at his best when we do this rotation thing with him. He needs to play on a regular basis. He is one of those ones that makes me worry a little bit when he's been out for a few games and we just dip his toes back in. So, yeah, I would like to see Toby Nyan just stay. I think consistency there for me. So maybe the fullbacks, definitely change. And maybe, yeah, the return of the barrel chest. Get it in, son.
Return of the barrel chest. All right, so prediction time, Matt. I'm going to start with you because you're obviously always the oracle when it comes to these things and you're so on point. So what are you thinking?
It's going to be a tough game. They're going to be, like James said, they're going to be well up for it. They're going to want to score the first goal, get the first win. But I still see us winning it. I say 2-0.
2-0, solid. Yeah. Nice bit of confidence there from Matt. James?
Unfortunately, I can see them being the first team to score here. So I'm going to go with a 3-1.
3-1. Okay, so still predicting a handsome victory for the boys. All right, Lee, let's see what you got.
Yeah, you know, I like both of those score lines, but I was edging towards 2-0. I think 3-0's just been greedy, but 2-0, I think.
Okay, all right. I mean, you don't have to ask me what I'm going to predict. You know it. We all know it. Tourette's 2-1. It's going to happen. Yeah, okay. Well, great to have you on the show today, James. Been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us. I've left you 5 minutes over time, so apologies for that, but you know, you can, you know, injury time. We'll call it injury time. So and you don't, and don't say it's don't same for you. All right, but we're not recording anymore. Lee and Matt, thank you once again for joining us, guys. Much appreciated. So we will be doing a special, obviously, before the Champions League game next week against Ajax. So please do join us for that one. Once again, thank you very much for watching and listening. And we are available on YouTube if you do want to see our ugly mugs, but this is a Skype show this evening. And obviously, I have a Facebook group, The Thing I Love Most Show. It's TTILM Show on Twitter and on Instagram. And we are available on all the podcast channels as well, Spotify, iTunes, all that jazz. So if you want to download us and listen to us on the way to work, then you're more than welcome to do so. If you do want to get involved with the show as well, and we do welcome people coming on. And so if you do want to give us an email, it's contact@thethingilovemostshow.com, or you can get in touch with us via the various social media channels. But another big game on Saturday. Fingers crossed it's another 3 points. And we'll see you guys next week. And as always, come on, you Spurs.